Welcome to the Rhone Podcast. Rhone is a curated physicians network that supports concierge, DPC, and private practices so they can remain independent without being alone. We believe that the future success of primary care requires membership-based medicine practices to thrive. Hello, I'm Dr. Scott Pope, CEO of Rhone, and I'm glad you found us. I hope you enjoy this latest episode of the Rhone Podcast. Welcome, everyone. We've got another excellent episode of the Rhone Podcast today. I have a very distinguished guest that's joining me from the Denver, Colorado area. Dr. Jim Min is the founder and CEO of a cardiovascular diagnostic company called Clearly. Dr. Min, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you. I don't know many people who have achieved lifetime achievement awards in their field and are still powering down. Usually you think about that lifetime achievement. If you've got lifetime achievement, man, that's, you know, you're riding off into the sunset and done. But man, it feels like you got a lot of work left to do.
Yeah, there's still a ton of work left unfinished. So we're here to get that job done.
Excellent. Well, let our listeners know a little bit more about you and kind of your journey that you've traversed to end up here as the founder and CEO Clearly.
Sure. I'm Jim Min. I'm a cardiologist by training. I did all of my postgraduate training at the University of Chicago. And then I moved to New York City in 2005, spent about 15 years working at Cornell Medical College and New York Presbyterian Hospital. A lot of that work that we had done there was sort of what formed the nidus and foundation of what we're doing at Clearly. So I can tell you a short story. Like I started my my first 7-8 years of my career, like doing a lot of ICU medicine. So critical care, like at that time, it was mostly patients who had had heart attacks and were in the intensive care unit. It was starting to transition into more heart failure patients right around 2013. But I had a young guy come in with a massive heart attack and just thought, wow, I'm on the wrong side of this curve. I just need to be on the prevention side rather than treating things that, you know, after a catastrophic event had already occurred. So what we did was we set up a new cardiovascular disease prevention program called Heart Health and hired 4 faculty, took a very, very different approach to cardiovascular disease prevention than any other program that I'm aware of. But that approach, which is what we've adopted for Clearly, is you fast forward 7 years with those 4 faculty members, we took care of some very, very sick people. And I recently talked to our director of that program and asked her, how many heart attacks did we see in that 7 years? She's like, not a single one. And so I thought, wow, you know what? Like there's that sort of, you know, gives you a little bit of tingles, aha moment where you're like, maybe we're on to something big here. But it was so time intensive and so resource intensive. We had the luxury there of being supported by a very, very generous philanthropist. And so we literally had 20 technologists just annotating images all day long so that we could better understand patients' heart disease. That was taking up to 8 hours per patient. And there weren't tools for us to then translate that for the patients and for the physicians. And so we said, look, let's standardize this whole approach. We think it works in our microcosm. It worked really, really well. And so let's try to deliver products to people at scale so that anybody across the world could really enjoy sort of these technological advances.
Outstanding. I love that story. And so you've had really a front row seat to all the things that are broken in some of that cardiovascular testing space. And we obviously don't have the time here to talk about everything that's broken in healthcare in general, but you know, why is that that paradigm that exists today for cardiovascular, you know, diagnostic testing? How would you, you know, in a few short words, how would you describe why that's broken?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, like I look back at the way I was trained as a cardiology fellow 20 years ago, and we do it exactly the same way. We say for asymptomatic patients, we'll treat your risk factors of disease. That's not disease. That's the things that predispose you to disease. Things like diabetes or high blood pressure or high cholesterol, very focused on high cholesterol as a field. And then we say, hey, you're asymptomatic. We'll treat that cholesterol. We'll send you home. The problem with that is that cholesterol levels miss about 70% of the people will come in with a heart attack. And it turns out treating cholesterol and lowering it, there's still about a 75% residual risk of disease, meaning that you just don't know who you're being effective in and who's not, because you're not measuring actual disease. It's a surrogate of disease. And then we tell people, why don't you come back when you have chest pain or shortness of breath? And it turns out almost 60% of people who have a heart attack will never have any symptoms. Everybody knows someone like that, right? Who was feeling fine one day and was dead the next. And, you know, we have all of our horror stories of the people's lives who we were touched by, who went out for a run and never came back, or went to sleep and never woke up. And yet in cardiology, we're so symptom driven. Like, we want to evaluate your chest pain, and so we'll put you on a stress test and a treadmill and take pictures of your heart. Turns out that misses about 75% of the lesions that cause heart attacks. So what we're doing is not working. And then what we asked ourselves was, well, what's the commonality between all of those failures? We've got the surrogates of disease, we've got symptoms of disease, and we've got downstream sequelae of disease. None of them are actually heart disease. They're all indirect markers of heart disease. So in our heart health program at Cornell, what we focused very heavily on was actual heart disease, which is the plaque or the atherosclerosis that builds up silently in the walls of the artery over many, many years, and leverage that to really guide precision heart care in a personalized fashion. So I think we can fix these problems, but it will take a lot of evidence generation. It's going to take a lot of education. But I think, you know, there's a certain obviousness that heart doctors should actually measure heart disease rather than indirect markers of disease. So that is sort of what clearly has developed its platform around.
You've touched on a couple of different things there. It kind of sparks two different questions. And one of them I want to get into second is, you know, I think that what you've described there is the symptom-based treatment is also a symptom of the broken healthcare system that we have, right? That is kind of the we call it churn and burn, hand on the door medicine, conveyor belt medicine. The physicians just don't have the time to get out in front of a lot of these things in most scenarios. And so they're left to kind of play Johnny Bench and just be the catcher of bad things as they come, and, you know, trying to get it back out. But before I go down to that, and you're talking about why this concierge medicine space might be ideal. So talk to me more about what the technology is that's, you know, that you're bringing to bear that really is fixing that paradigm. And explain to my listeners kind of in very, you know, simple terms, what is it that clearly is doing around imaging of those plaques, and how is it really solving this pervasive problem?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Like, and you know, I want to just go back to when we started that prevention program in 2013. I'd like to take credit that, like, we invented a really new paradigm. We actually didn't. We just copied it. Like, what we did was we looked around at the world's most successful preventive care paradigms in medicine, and they were all in cancer mortality prevention, whether you use a mammogram or colonoscopy or a lung CT scan. And what I realized was, wait, 20 years ago, I wasn't taught that. We were telling women to do monthly breast exams, and we were checking for blood in the stool. We were doing chest x-rays. All of those indirect ways fell by the wayside in lieu of advanced non-invasive imaging that directly visualizes, characterizes disease. So that was the thesis. We said, well, now we've got this non-invasive approach to image the actual plaque within the arteries using a CT scan that has radiation doses, if done well, that are on par with a screening mammogram. So safe at this point in time that you could literally repeat it every year with no adverse events to the or risk to the patient. And we had this fundamental new opportunity to actually characterize the disease. Turns out we didn't understand what we were looking at, because nobody had ever looked at heart disease at scale. And so I remember I had done a CT scan for Matt Lauer and went on the Today Show, and they had all these different TVs. I think at the time they were plasma screen TVs. And he pointed to one of his arteries and said, oh, is that the good kind of plaque or the bad kind of plaque? And I sort of glibly said, Matt, there is no such thing as good plaque. It turns out I was wrong. There are many different, we thought heart disease was a single entity. It's not. It's like cancer. There's many, many different kinds of cancer, and there's many, many different kinds of heart disease. And within the plaques, what we found was that certain plaques are the strongest discriminator of who will have a heart attack and who won't. They're stronger than anything else out there. And then what we also found was that there were certain plaques that were very low risk plaques. They were stable. And what we thirdly found out was through a bunch of clinical trials that you can make the high risk plaques, or that there tend to be the darker cholesterol fatty filled plaques. You can actually transform their morphology and turn them into the lower risk plaques by increasing their density, calcifying them, turning them into rocks that are biologically inert and don't cause harm. And so armed with that information, that's what we use to really personalize the care. Specifically, it pertains to concierge medicine. We have so many concierge medicine partners. And what we find is that, one, they're proactive, right? So if you think about it, we spend half of our healthcare dollars on the last 6 months of life. That, think about, if you put in all of that resource towards prevention, what kind of good you could do for mankind. And so, like, this whole reactive, I'm only going to start treating you when you have symptoms. I think that if a woman said, well, I don't have any symptoms, but I have breast cancer, to not treat that woman because she doesn't have symptoms, is, everybody would agree that that's absurd. So why do we wait for heart disease patients to come in at the end stage? We should be treating them early. The other thing I'll say is that the patients in concierge medicine tend to be more proactive too. And so, you know, you can work with them in a way that gets the treatment very early. In every study that you look at in imaging, the strongest predictor of who's going to be a rapid progressor is the amount of disease that you have. So the horse is already out of the barn if you've got a lot, because it's just a hard process to control. You can control the process very, very easily when you can spot and detect the disease very, very easily. So, and our therapies are not, we're talking about lifestyle interventions, right? And modifications. We're talking about low cost generic medical therapy. We're not talking about things that break the bank. Like, we think that if we can support doctors and physicians to really standardize an approach to personalizing healthcare, getting it very, very early when people don't know that they're sick, but that they are, then we can really make a big dent into preventing the symptoms and the catastrophic events from occurring.
So in this concierge patient population, and I think you've articulated it very well, I think the patients are much more, bring a proactive mindset to their care, much more than the patient just stops into the ER for an episode of care and doesn't actually have a primary care doctor. So I think your patients are more receptive to these types of diagnostic testing. I think the physicians have a lot more time and bandwidth, and I think they actually focus a lot more on preventing things from happening up front. What is the ideal patient profile that you would recommend for this type of advanced testing? Is it, do you wait until people are in their 40s and 50s? You know, some of the people that I know that I've lost, to these sudden heart attacks, that they're not in their 50s and 60s. They die long before the angiogenesis has an opportunity to, or perfuse the rest of their heart, and the big plaque just shuts them down immediately and it's done. How early on in a patient's life should we be contemplating this? We check, if you're doing annual physicals, you'll check cholesterol all the time, right? At least once a year. How early is the right time to start with this testing?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. Like, we know from the Korean War, dating back in the Vietnam War, when the soldiers who died in the war, they had atherosclerosis building up even in their teens and early 20s. We also know that if you look at, there was a paper that was published in the New England Journal of Medicine that showed that the average age of sudden coronary death due to fatal heart attacks was 50. And that means half the people are in their 40s when they're dying, right? So that speaks to the people that you are touched by. So I think that what we need is a number of things. The first is we need a lot of evidence generation. I mean, this sort of vascular biology that we are talking about today was just published in the last 5 years. And so it's new information to the field. And so now what we're going to have to do is to do a series of large scale clinical trials to prove in specific populations of people that this approach of supporting doctors with tools that help them to comprehensively characterize and quantify diseases, it can improve outcomes. And our company is dedicated to that. Like, we were founded on science, we'll always do that. For those who are more proactive, even before those trials are completed, I think it's anybody at elevated risk. I mean, if you look at all of the things that contribute to heart disease, like if people are proactive and their physicians want to, we would certainly support by providing the services to anybody with elevated risk, whether that's using a risk calculator, whether that's using risk factors like high blood pressure, high cholesterol. There's a whole bunch of others that people don't talk about, like polycystic ovarian syndrome, menopause in women, HIV positivity on highly activating antiretroviral therapy. There's just a ton of disease states that really multiply your risk of heart attack. And I think for those who are so inclined, if they want to know, like, there are tools now available for them to do so.
Yeah. No, that's outstanding. So help me a little bit logistically then. So if I'm a patient and I want to pursue this with my doctor, what do I need to do as a patient? Is there just a clearly test that I get done? Do I need to do a test and then send you the result? How does that logistically work?
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, I think first, a careful consultation with your concierge doc, because I think the partnership in care is a great one to have. If your physician says, you know what, I think you would benefit from an analysis like this, then you'll undergo a non-invasive CT angiogram of the heart. A CT angiogram, it requires one IV and an injection of dye to sort of brighten up the inside of the vessel so that we can see it on the image. Again, a very safe procedure, all in, like at a high performing facility, should take 10, 15 minutes in and out the door and should be painless. Once that happens, like if it's a clearly enabled facility, then we automatically ingest the CT scan into our computational cloud and then perform the analyses. There's a series of artificial intelligence or machine intelligence algorithms that process in parallel. And then in about an hour, the results will be available. With the results available and delivered to each and every stakeholder in the care pathway, that includes the patient, what we found is that many patients don't understand the radiology report that we give them, nor should they. Like, we're not essentially writing those reports for them. So our company generates a 20 to 25 page book that's personalized for every patient's analysis to really go over and explain to people what's going on in a manner that everybody can really understand. We've gotten a lot of very, very positive feedback on, finally, I get what we're treating, why we're treating it, and so on. And then those results would be also available to the physician. For concierge physicians, we tend to, we onboard them. Takes generally 15 to 30 minutes or so to onboard them, to really help them understand what the analysis can provide and what they might be interested in. And we're always available in case people have additional questions and whatnot. So that's, I think that if you don't have a clearly enabled imaging facility close to where you are, there are other ways that we can do this. Semi-automatic or more manual, but like not really very, it doesn't take a lot of time. So I think that wherever anybody is, as long as you can get a CT scan of the heart, we can fulfill that and that analysis for you.
Yeah. You've hit on another item that I always try to advise my concierge medicine docs as they get into some of these newer diagnostics and newer tests. And, you know, when you see the results, it's not just that, you know, oh, the potassium is, you know, 3.7, right? There's a 25 page book that's involved in explaining this. You know, we see it with some of the oncology diagnostic tests. We see it with some of the genomic tests. And what I encourage all of my physicians, whether or not you're, you know, charging for a particular diagnostic or a test, whatever that fee may be, that you got a budget, that there's your time involved in interpreting this and then turning that back around into a treatment plan for these patients. And, you know, if you are charging an additional fee for the test, be sure that you're contemplating the additional time it's going to take. You know, and I don't think that's going to be an 8-hour type of scenario, but man, even if it's an hour, like you need to be compensated for that as you go through. So I think it's wonderful that we have additional information and, you know, ways to get out in front of some of these things before they become catastrophic events or high cost episodes of care. But the physicians who are, you know, doing a lot of the work need to make sure that they're, you know, taking care of themselves and defending themselves on the time side. You know, there are a lot of new diagnostics that are coming out, and I'm thrilled that we were able to get you. So we're recording this here in August, and last month you announced a successful Series C round that was, make sure I get this number right, with $223 million. Total amount. And that comes on the heels of your 2021 Series B round that was $45 million. And so how has that kind of changed the perception of when we, as physicians taking care of patients, and I don't want to get hooked on something that's just a fly by night and isn't going to be around, but, and you've got some pretty deep pockets and $223 million. It feels like you guys are here to stay.
I think we are. I hope we are, Scott. Like, you know, I spent the first 15 years of my career taking care of patients and really doing the clinical trials to better understand the vascular biology. As of last November, we saw the American Heart Association guidelines elevate CT angiography to level 1A recommendation for patients with suspected coronary disease above other modalities. So I felt like that part of my career was done. And now it was to try to deliver tools that really anybody could use globally and to try to influence policy statements so that we can get to people earlier. And we're committed to that evidence generation. To your point, like, yeah, we are adequately sourced at this point in time so that we can really grow and scale. And we are also, in parallel to that, committed to the scientific evidence generation, similar to what we've been doing for the last 17 years. And we'll do that. And we were not running out of operating capital. We had plenty of runway to go, but we were just blessed to meet some very visionary, long game, strong investors in T. Rowe Price and Fidelity Investments who understood the vision of what we're really trying to go after. So very, very grateful to them, as well just as a superb syndicate of like other investors that include sort of tech-enabled investors, health systems, pharmaceutical companies, where I think everybody sees this value proposition about getting, using our tools to technology to really get people earlier in the diagnostic cascade at a time they can be more easily treated, where events can be prevented so that we can bend the total cost of care curve downwards in a manner that improves outcomes while lowering costs. And that is our ultimate vision at Clearly, is to really develop those tools to help support physicians and patients to accomplish that.
Yeah. And for our listeners who aren't familiar with your CV, the number of peer-reviewed publications that exist on there is long, to say the least. So your contributions to the medical literature are extensive. And I'm certain that that's going to continue to go forward here with more and more data coming out of Clearly. You know, on the data front, as I was preparing for this, I was kind of curious myself after, you know, calendar 2020, COVID jumped up, and it was that was all you heard about from a cause of death perspective. You couldn't turn on a radio or a TV or, you know, read an article in the news without it talking about, you know, that COVID mortality rate. And what I found when I actually went to the CDC website is that heart disease not only outpaced COVID even in 2020, but it was still twofold higher than what COVID mortality was. I've really enjoyed the conversation with you, but based on some of those, you know, some of those statistics, what kind of parting words would you have for our listeners and for my audience here?
I think be proactive. I think be personalized, like precision heart care, similar to what we have evolved to in cancer care. Using genotypic markers to really guide therapies. I think in cardiology, phenotypic, and by phenotypic, what I mean is the plaque that builds up in the type of plaque. What we tell the patients is that is the lifelong metric. It's the metric of the lifelong exposure of every known and unknown risk factor that has contributed to heart disease over your entire life. And we can find it in one metric by visualizing actual disease rather than guessing by using surrogates. Couldn't agree with you more. It is the number one public health epidemic. 2 times more cardiovascular deaths in 2020 than COVID deaths from COVID-19. And what that equates to is one cardiovascular death every 1.7 seconds across this world. And it became a punchline, like, oh my gosh, you almost gave me a heart attack. No, it's not a punchline. It's like, I mean, we've seen too many of these people. And when sudden fatal heart attack affects an average age of 50, like, we've got to find these people and get them adequately treated. So that is part of the mission of Clearly. And hopefully we have developed tools and solutions that, like, really speak to people. We've heard a warm reception in the marketplace where our client partners are really seem to be very happy with the tools. But more importantly, the patients seem to really love it. Like, they're like, I finally understand why we're treating it, what we're treating, how we're treating it. And then you see that, like, when they understand, the adherence tends to go up, right? The compliance to their lifestyle and to their medical therapy. So just trying to do good for this world and really help sort of develop tools that can support doctors and patients.
Excellent. Well, I'm no Matt Lauer, but I hope you've enjoyed your time with me today.
Very much so.
Dr. Jim Min, founder and CEO of Clearly. I hope you'll come back. You've been an excellent guest. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Scott. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Roan Podcast. If you enjoyed your time here, be sure to subscribe. If you have a story you would like to share on the Roan Podcast, I encourage you to reach out. After all, we are stronger together. Now, I invite you to take a few for you and enjoy 3 minutes of relaxing audio. Be well, my friends.